Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up later in the hour, live in the studio with me, we're expecting Democratic presidential candidate, former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Julian Castro. Your questions, 1-866-780-9100. Julian Castro live in our studio in the second half hour today. Let's start off with this week's RAGBRAI shocker. It was on Tuesday that four officials of the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, that's the entire RAGBRAI staff, announced their resignations from RAGBRAI. They also announced they're starting a new ride called Iowa's Ride, and it's to happen the same week as RAGBRAI in the summer of 2020. Now, this move stems from a rift over the Des Moines Register's handling of the Carson King story. If you remember, that's the Register article about Carson King sending racially insensitive tweets as a teenager. The Register widely criticized for its handling of that situation. Now, the RAGBRAI officials who resigned said after getting criticism on the Carson King affair, they wanted to show they were not connected to that decision to run the Register's story, but were not allowed to. Joining me now with his view, former Iowa columnist for the Des Moines Register, we should point out here, no longer employed by the Register, Kyle Munson, a man who has ridden and wrote about RAGBRAI many times. Kyle Munson, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much, Ben. I appreciate it.
Okay. What a week. How are you feeling?
I'm heartbroken, and I'm wondering if I've stepped into a bizarre alternate reality. It was a mind spin this week to see a cultural institution that has been so central to my life, to see it kind of split apart in the way it has been.
Yeah, and you were employed by the Register for many years, and you are also well acquainted with the RAGBRAI staff here. I wonder, what's your view of each side's position?
Well, I mean, that gets tough. Yeah, it really is a family split in my world, and it's horrible. I mean, I haven't worked for the Register for a year and a half. I'm, you know, former Iowa columnist, but even just a week and a half ago, I gave a presentation on RAGBRAI at a local library because they just wanted me to talk about it and my experience and about the history of the ride. And I've always said it's still one of the most important creation stories in my life because you had these two figures, John Karras and Donald Call, that gave birth to this thing kind of in the wake of, you know, the Woodstock era and just invited people to join them. And just the embrace of bicycling and the culture and the rural landscape that RAGBRAI represented and the creative zeal that it represented on their behalf has been a powerful example in my life. And so to see it once again, here we have another corner of our lives that's been polarized. That just strikes at my heart.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, blame is easy to toss around, and it's kind of like it's the latest wrinkle on this crazy life we've been living in the wake of the Carson King sign and all the issues that have flowed out of that, and that has it's been a lot to process.
Right, it sure has for me as well. Kyle, we rode along this past summer on RAGBRAI. You've written about RAGBRAI, rode on it many, many times. It's a 7-day cross-state bicycle ride across Iowa, the oldest, largest, and longest bike touring event in the world. And, Kyle, you and I know well that if you go on RAGBRAI, maybe half the people are Iowans, but the other half are from all 50 states and from around the world. This is a huge deal, not just if you live in Iowa.
Oh, completely. I've ridden, I've spent time with riders from Italy, riders from China, riders from the Middle East. I rode with the mayor of Fort Worth, Texas. Of course, famous bicyclists, racers. So many people that you will see join this ride because it offers that rare atmosphere. And RAGBRAI Nation is always known as a non-political safe space, just about celebrating our common humanity. So That I want to see that preserved.
Right. Okay, so let's get into your thoughts on the future, your hopes, your fears. Does Iowa's ride have a chance to establish itself as a competitor?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that Iowa keeps growing in bicycling, and so in general, I think more and more bicycling is going to happen, and I want to see that happen. It'd be nice if the rides were on different weeks. I'd love to bike my way across Iowa, turn around, and do it again, and then take 2 weeks off. You know, part of this thing, it's the dismaying thing is, so it got wrapped up in the Carson King saga, which is largely unfair. I mean, that to me is one of the big messages out of this. The prevailing narrative out there that the Register did a hit job on Carson King is wrong, and that's what the way that misinformation or even disinformation can be spread in today's world. This is sort of a symbol for that, because if you look at the timeline of that story, and you know, I don't want to go through everything, but the information about Carson King and, you know, what he did as a 16-year-old, that was coming out, and somebody, you know, the beer company either found out themselves or somebody else informed them, you know, not Carson King, not the Register. So that information was coming to light already before the Register published its story, and yet the prevailing narrative out there still today is that, you know, this is all a media hit job, and you know, this news organization deserves to go down in flames. That's all wrong. I mean, there are different things that can be critiqued about the eventual story that the Register did publish, or so many other issues about the journalists that covered it and everything else. Those are all issues that can be debated. But what pains me is how misinformation can endure today, and is just wrapped up in this complete Gordian knot of a situation that now has entangled Ragbri. And that's why I feel like I've lost hold of reality.
Right. Okay, so to finish up here, Kyle, with your thoughts, what do you see going forward?
Can there be
a reconciliation of any kind, do you think, from what you know?
I have no idea. I mean, I know this. There will be thousands of people bicycling across Iowa in July. But that's going to happen. And I think Ragbri is a powerful force that is going to endure. I sent a note to John Karras to help me kind of clarify my thoughts. And I said, you know, John, this what's going on now has nothing to do with what you created in 1973. That idea remains as pure today as it ever was. And this has everything to do really with kind of the crisis in the local news economy. And I told him, just don't be dismayed. What you created is just as valid today as it ever was.
Right. John Karras, one of the co-founders of Ragbri, along with the late Donald Call, founding this great Iowa institution back in 1973. They didn't know they were doing it, but they did. And wow, what a cultural institution we have here. We'll watch and cross our fingers. Kyle Munson, thank you for your observations.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for sharing the miles with me on the Ragbri trip.
And we will in the future, Kyle, in some form or fashion, right?
Amen. Amen.
Former Iowa columnist for the Des Moines Register, Kyle Munson.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in about a half an hour, we expect the U.S. former U.S. Secretary of HUD, Julian Castro, of course, Democratic presidential candidate, to be in the studio with me. And we'll entertain a number of the questions you've been sending in. But first, let's go to the ag sector, that trade war with China, ethanol production, making news in recent days. Let's get an update from IPR's Amy Mayer. Amy, welcome back to our program.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. So which should we tackle first, the ethanol or the trade update? You get to choose.
Okay, well, sure. Let's just start with the China deal then. The president announced last Friday that he and the Chinese vice premier had come to a verbal agreement on getting us out of this trade war that's been going on for, in very obvious ways, 18 months, although much longer than that in sort of the back channels. And so Trump is very confident that this is going to be a fantastic deal. As of Friday, when he made the announcement, nothing had been signed, but there are hopes that the negotiators working behind the scenes may have the paperwork settled and the real deals worked out in time for a possible signature ceremony in November when the two leaders meet again in Chile.
Mm-hmm. And right, and how many billions are we talking about in the trade deal? Not that I have any grasp of even $1 billion, but go ahead.
Right. At some level, it starts to feel like funny money. But well, so right now, because of the variety of issues on which the U.S. and China can't agree in their trade relationship, we are each country is imposing on the other tariffs. And so the first thing that was significant about the deal announcement Friday is that an increase in the tariffs that we were imposing on Chinese goods was supposed to take place this past Tuesday, but because of the success of those conversations, that didn't happen. So currently there is a 25% tariff on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods coming into the U.S. That's all kinds of goods, but it has had a particular impact here in Iowa because it affects soybeans. The retaliatory tariffs that China imposed affect our soybeans going to China. So everything has been a sort of back and forth between the two sides. What Trump said on Friday is that when this deal is finalized, he expects China to agree to purchase $40 to $50 billion worth of U.S. agricultural products, which is what farmers have been hoping to hear, right? They want to hear something that is going to make them whole again, that is going to improve the situation. The president did not say was over what period of time that $40 to $50 billion purchase would happen and whether that would become an annual amount or, you know, more of a one time over 2 years and then we'd see what happens. If it were an annual amount, it would be significantly more than China has ever imported from the U.S. before. But if it's over 2 years, as I've seen in some places, that would look just a little bit more like slightly above average for what the Chinese had been importing before the trade war began.
Okay. Another item which many in the ag community have their fingers crossed about, the ethanol production, which has been, what, declining since August, right?
Right. A couple of plants in Iowa have been idled, and that is tied to, or at least the announcements of their idlings were tied to a decision the EPA announced in August that they would exempt certain smaller refineries from having to blend in the ethanol that they're normally obliged to mix in. Iowa's politicians, including Governor Kim Reynolds, went to Washington. Some of them actually met in the White House with Trump and some of his officials. They were promised there'd be a deal that would replenish the sort of quote-unquote lost gallons that were exempted. That deal was announced this week. The EPA, they supposedly made an agreement at the White House. They were waiting on something official to come out from the EPA. That came out this week. And many ethanol industry supporters and some of Iowa's politicians were disappointed in what was revealed.
Mm. What have our members of Congress from Iowa, especially the Republicans, who should have the president's ear in some way, been doing or saying here?
Well, Senators Ernst and Grassley were saying between October 4th, when the original deal was ostensibly made verbally, and this week that they were expecting the administration to do the right thing, that they were confident that they had reached a deal, but they wanted to see it on paper. Kim Reynolds, also the governor, saying she needed to see something in writing, but she was confident the president would stick to his word. What has come out of the Environmental Protection Agency this week did not seem to be the deal that those Republican representatives of Iowa thought they had gotten. So there has been a bit of disappointment, some amount of dismay, and many in the renewable fuels industry are still hoping that the president will be able to exert his own influence on the EPA to sort of adjust things in the direction that our Iowa representatives thought they had agreed to.
Mm-hmm. As we've seen the releases from Ernst and Grassley's office, do we get the feeling that they do have the president's ear? Are they shaping? Are they swaying? Are they influencing this for Iowa farmers in a big way?
Certainly, Senators Ernst and Grassley have done everything they think they can do to try to go to bat for Iowa's corn farmers and other farmers on this issue. They have had meetings over the past almost a year. They have been having meetings with the president on the question of ethanol. Some of those meetings were credited with the president's decision to encourage the EPA to allow the year-round sales of E15, which was seen as a big victory for ethanol. But now I think there are some who are starting to say, well, yes, corn state lawmakers do have some influence, but it doesn't seem to be greater than the influence of big oil, which is what some people say is the lobby that has caused EPA to not grant the level of reconciliation that the ethanol industry was looking for.
Right. This has been being cast as big oil versus what, big ethanol or middle ethanol or little ethanol
or, yeah,
or big corn, whatever you want to choose. We've got about a minute left. Give us a sense, Amy, of what farmers are saying. What are you hearing from the ag community? How is this resonating? How many are feeling the hurt?
things are really mixed. I mean, certainly everybody who grows soybeans, which is a significant amount of the farmers in Iowa, have been feeling the pinch from the China tariffs that we were talking about earlier. They're just, prices have stagnated. There aren't as many places to take it. A lot of farmers are trying to hold on to soybeans. Unfortunately, the weather may actually help with that because, you know, depending on what happens with the harvest, that could actually help prices a little bit. But a lot of farmers who voted for Trump have told me they're waiting to see what happens with the resolution on ethanol because they're not sure they're going to stick with him if he doesn't carry through with the promises that he's made. And right now they're feeling that they've been reneged upon.
Right. And so that's the big question that neither of us can answer is the possible political consequences from this administration's policies on the base of his support here in Iowa, the farm base, you should say. And these two issues really having an impact there. We'll no doubt check back in with you. Thank you, Amy Mayer.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's continue getting to know a group of writers from around the world who are currently taking part in a 3-month residency here in Iowa. There are 29 writers from 26 countries who've been invited by the University of Iowa's International Writing Program. I had a chance to talk with a number of these international writers when they were here the first week of their arrival in early September. We're meeting them each Friday here on River to River.
Hello, my name is Gabriela Roman Fuentes, and I'm from Mexico. And I'm a playwright, so I write drama since maybe 6 years ago. And I really like to talk about women issues in Mexico because there's a lot of issues there. And migration, indigenous people, and kids.
And kids. Talk a little bit more about what, in more detail, what you write about in terms of women's issues.
For example, the violence. It's really hard in Mexico now that we have a lot of violence against women, that we have like killing girls, missing girls, where it's really strong problem in Mexico. And I'm really concerned about that. So I write a lot. And especially about identity of women, of young women, and how can we build that in a Mexico that is full of violence.
Mm-hmm. What is behind the violence against women in Mexico?
There's a lot of things, economical, political, but also like a cultural issue that, you know, macho, that build this idea that women are like objects that they can be conquered by men. So it's like easier to kill someone because it's a lot of corruption too. But it's also this idea that, I believe that Mexican women are built like a saint or a whore. So it's hard to be between those kind of conception, of women conception.
Mm-hmm. Do you know people, women, who've had violence committed against them?
Yes. For example, a friend of the sister of a friend of mine was killed. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it's terrible because some of these killings are disguised, like suicide.
Disguised as suicide, yeah. So to cover it up.
Yes, that would happen a lot. And many children also disappear, for example, for sexual maybe reasons or we don't know.
Mm-hmm. And you write about kids. What do you write about kids?
Well, I like to write about identity because I think it's very important to kids to feel that they are supported by a family or a culture, that, especially indigenous girls. Who, you know, Mexico is also kind of racist. So for me, it's important that every kid has his own identity, even if it doesn't matter if they don't speak Spanish or any other language, indigenous language. For me, it's important to build their identity and be whatever they want to be.
So you bring these themes that you've already written about in your career as a writer here to the United States, specifically to Iowa, to the International Writing Program. Why? What do you hope to gain here?
Things like the exchange with people from all over the world. For example, we were talking about women issues that we are like, even if we are from different parts of the world, we have like the same question of what means to be a woman nowadays.
What is your answer to that question?
I don't know yet. I still like gathering all the questions before and I don't know, maybe answer later. Mm-hmm.
How much exposure do you have to the United States? How much have you been here?
And not many times, but a few. Mm-hmm. And
when we go back to your question of what it means to be a woman, do you compare the cultures? What do you What do you think of when you compare American culture, the United States, with Mexican culture and women's issues? Do you see comparisons there, contrasts?
Yes, a lot of comparisons. For example, we were talking about motherhood, how we, before 30s, we start to making us many questions about do I want to be a mother or not? Can you have a career and a motherhood and all that? And the similar questions.
And you come at a time, of course, when a very controversial topic in this country and in yours is immigration, our connection, our relationship in North America with Latin America, with Mexico, also North America, of course. But does immigration feed into your writing as well?
Yes, of course. It's one of my main issues because I feel myself like a migrant because I born and I grew up in a little city in the south of Mexico, and now I'm living in Mexico City, so I know, and I travel all around the world, so I know how it feels to be out, you know, abroad. So for me, it's really important to talk about that. Mm-hmm.
And what specifically do you want to accomplish while you're here in Iowa? Do you have something specific?
Well, many things. I would like to finish some plays that I have in mind, but also I want to try poetry and fiction.
Try poetry and fiction. So you haven't written any poetry or fiction?
Just a little bit. Yeah. So I really want to make like a book of short stories, and let's see what happens.
So will you turn to the established poets and fiction writers here for advice, for instance?
Of course. I want to like take advantage of them. Uh-huh. So, and that's why I really want to try that.
What interests you most about being here in Iowa, in this part of the United States, where many people fly over this part of the United States? It doesn't get a lot of attention internationally. What interests you about Iowa?
I think that this international space that you really can exchange with people from all around the world, it's a unique opportunity that maybe in Mexico you don't have that much.
Okay, thank you very much. Gabriela, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thank you for this space.
My recent conversation with Gabriela Roman Fuentes from Mexico. She's a writer taking part in this year's International Writing Program residency at the University of Iowa. Find out more about all the events offered at the IWP Iowa during the residency this year by searching for IWP Iowa with your favorite search engine. Coming up after a short break, live in the studio with me, Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro. Join our conversation. Your question for Julian Castro, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.